thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 12th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the British Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Mr. Billington. How about yourself?
I'm absolutely shattered. I was over at Le Mans Classic over the weekend, so I've spent God knows how many weird late nights photographing things, having dinners, and just basically an absolute time of my life. But I'm paying the price for it heavily now, because we got back late on Sunday. We were supposed to fly home. I should have landed back in the UK with enough time to get home and put the British Grand Prix on. I ended up watching...
But to quote a famous man, you didn't.
I didn't, no. I ended up watching the entirety of the British Grand Prix sat on my ass in Tours Airport waiting for my flight. In fact, I got to watch the entire Grand Prix and then a whole load of the post-race bits before the plane had even started taxiing towards the runway to take us home again. So I did see Nico Hülkenberg's first podium ever while sat in seat 10E on a Ryanair flight from Tours to Stansted. So, if someone...
I'm sure it's a memory you're going to treasure forever just for that seat 10E part of it.
Yeah, when someone asks, where were you when, I'll be able to say... and have a very unique story to it. But yes, I did get to watch the Grand Prix over the weekend. I've obviously been sort of putting together some news, but yeah, absolutely shattered because I was up till about 2 a.m. this morning putting together the Classic Car Weekly coverage from Le Mans. But I'm here now. I'm ready to talk about the British Grand Prix. Well, actually, no, we've got a bit of news to touch on first. And first piece of news is that dismissed FIA member Tim Meyer has announced he will run against Mohamed Ben Sulayem for FIA presidency.
Important to note a bit of his backstory in terms of when he was, instrumental at McLaren. He's been at the FIA for 15 years, was allegedly fired by text, and was one of the many, many people who MBS decided was no longer needed at the FIA as soon as he started trying to consolidate his power at the firm. I'm just glad that someone is running against him. And he's apparently got enough support to do so, which is also a big thing. The odds are heavily stacked against him, but if he can assemble all of those that MBS has wronged, and let's face it, it's a long list, he might just be able to put forward a compelling case to stop people for at least a moment and get them to think about what is at stake here. It'll be tough to win for him, but as Hülkenberg proved this weekend, and it's quite poetic in hindsight, given that he announced this at Silverstone too, never give up today, over till it's over.
Yes, yeah, it's not over till it's over. And I think that he stands possibly a good chance, if he's able to sort of court the right people and get the right sort of right figures on side, he stands to do quite well from this, because he's obviously got experience within teams, he's got experience within the FIA, he's a well-rounded individual when it comes to this appointment. But yeah, like you said, it's an uphill battle going against his former employer into sort of a world that's changed a lot since he was likely sort of dismissed. So yeah, interesting grounds, and one we'll keep an ear to the ground on the development of his run for presidency as it goes by. Elsewhere, obviously we've already mentioned Nico Hülkenberg, podium at the British Grand Prix, the first one in, 239th race start for Nico Hülkenberg, and he finally gets it on the podium. Someone impressively put a tenner on Hülkenberg to get a podium, and as a result made just shy of £5,000, £4,925 off of a £10 bet. They even put the bet on before qualifying as well. So they had 500-1 odds, which were pretty astonishing. And well done to them.
Definitely.
I mean, the important thing off the back of it, though, is can you name the driver who now regains the record for the most race starts without a podium?
Is that, I'm taking on the current field or just generally?
In history of all time.
Oh, in history of all time, crikey. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head now, but I'm trying to think who was there for a really long time who didn't get on a podium. It's hard these days because everyone gets fired after about 5 minutes usually. Good question. Say again.
Let me see if I can give you some clues. Same nationality as Nico Hülkenberg. Has raced for several of the same teams. In fact, his last team he raced for was the team that Nico Hülkenberg won his podium with, Sauber.
Oh, that does narrow it down a bit, but I'm just going to draw a blank and I'm not going to draw this out as long as before. And just tell me, I think.
Oh, you're not going to make it, not going to draw it out as long as our sort of
Not going to
character.
be excruciating as you two last week, where
I
you
had to
took until
name
the ninth
each of
person to
your
remember Lewis Hamilton.
We thought you'd already included him. The driver is, of course, Adrian Sutil with
Oh, yeah, that wasn't going to happen. The better
128
clue would have
points.
been bottle smash. I would have guessed immediately then. Who gets into fights? I remember. There
Yes.
we go.
128 race starts for Adrian Sutil, never stood on the podium. 124 points. So he did an all right time of things. Trying to see if I can figure out what his highest ever finish was. He's finished fourth a couple of times. So much like Hülkenberg, had come close to tasting victory. He even had a few fifths as well. Ran with, joined his first sort of full season was with Spyker. If you remember them, and then obviously Force India for a good run, and then his final season was 2014 with Sauber, a very dire season indeed. But there we go. Adrian Sutil now regains the unwanted title of most race starts without a podium finish. With that out of the way, then we might as well jump into our team by team analysis as we look back on the Grand Prix. We'll kick off with McLaren, who I believe are now on twice the points of the constructor in
Over double.
double. Yeah, they've got a fairly handy lead when it comes to this championship. Norris qualified third and Piastri qualified second. Piastri would finish where he qualified and Norris would jump him to take the win. I will say on the story of Lando Norris's win, we do like a bit of a sort of historic tie-in. So I'd like to draw your attention to 2008. Lewis Hamilton wins the Australian Grand Prix on the 16th of March. He then
Oh, we're doing this, are we?
goes on to win the Monaco Grand Prix on the 25th of May. He DNFs in Canada. He then qualifies outside the top two at the British Grand Prix while an Australian qualifies second and then wins the race on the 6th of July. Lando Norris has hit each one of those story beats so far. Take
Here's
with
hoping that's where history ends repeating itself.
that the pinch of salt of a size that you might wish. But there we go. It's another clean sweep for McLaren, isn't it? And despite the challenging conditions, they looked truly untouchable this weekend. I will say, while obviously he didn't win the race, Piastri's pace was phenomenal. And when you consider his penalty, he ate into Norris's lead at a rate of knots. Norris, however, did exactly what he needed to this weekend, and his rebuilt attitude is paying dividends. First time seeing Oscar properly rattled as well off the back of that penalty. So it'll be interesting to see what this does for his run. Maybe it'll kickstart him into a 2021 Hamilton style sweep for a few races that'll enliven the title fight a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think Piastri angry is not something we've obviously seen too much of because I think his Coulthard may have said in commentary, that's his happy face and his sad face and his angry face. It's all the same face. I don't think it's gonna grate on him for very long because he's more than capable of growing a line into something and moving on pretty darn quickly, unlike his teammate. But that was Piastri's race through and through. And I think the thing that's just most frustrating about this is that the stewards just need to be more consistent or at least justify and explain the choices that they're making. 10 seconds for Piastri doing what many drivers have done. Maybe the conditions can't be against him there, but still. And then also 10 seconds for what was a racing incident between Yuki and Behrmann was just such an odd move and just the latest in a long line of cock-ups. It was a bit odd for me after the Grand Prix, Norris saying he won because he drove a great race. On the one hand, as you say, he did what he needed to do. He kept it on track, but that was hardly the only reason. Your main rival got a penalty, so that before anything had even happened at that point, we were thinking, well, there's no incentive for him to go chasing after him. He can be a bit more, as long as he keeps a buffer back to have behind him, or he just needs to get past Max, this is before Max span, then he'll be fine. And then Max obviously spun out as well. And that massively helps you. And then who's behind you at that point? Lance Stroll. That's not going to happen, is it? So it was just a little bit half a dozen of one, half a dozen of the other sort of thing. And like you say, he did what he needed to do, and he's going to be very happy to have won the British Grand Prix. It's the one thing he's wanted more than anything, bar a championship for God knows how long. But to say it was because you drove a brilliant race is a bit of a misleading statement, I think. There, it's another reason why it was frustrating from the stewards. I think we'd have loved and really given him more credit if they'd been able to race properly against each other again, and let's see them duke it out. We want to see them duke it out. We don't want it decided by a DNF. We don't want it decided by the stewards being stewards. We want to see them doing what they did in Austria, because that one, fair enough, Lando was able to do the better job and keep Oscar behind and didn't buckle under the pressure as we've seen him done so many times before. It would have been nice to get that again. So it just feels like we another little what if.
Yeah, it's a what if, but not necessarily the driver's performance. It's a what if at the sort of stewards, and it would have been interesting to see those two drivers battling for pace in the wet, because there were points where it looked like Piastri had the upper hand, but then obviously tyre degradation kicked in as the circuit dried up for a period, and those intermediates very quickly degrade. They're a very soft compound of rubber. I think we're talking right down the bottom end of the Pirelli spectrum, and obviously the tread face quickly disappears and starts to move around, so you lose traction when you're really pushing on them. So yeah, as fantastic as it is to have Lando Norris as the what the 10th British
13th.
13th
You should know this answer last week.
I should know that statistic. The 13th different British Grand Prix, British Grand Prix winner. It's yeah, you sort of you're happy for that, you're excited by that. But as with so much of Lando Norris's career so far, you're still left with this strange little what if in the back of your mind. And I don't think that should take anything away from his achievement, even staying on track through that and being able to perform so cleanly across that weekend is a milestone
I
in
think that's the
itself.
crux of it, though. We don't need it. We don't need him to be helped by something. He's already doing enough as it is. You look at Australia. You can't like he mucked up, but he managed to keep it going, and he was there, and he kept us having a day. That is kind of what we wanted here. If it was going to happen, and if no one was going to be able to stop him, we didn't need. Oh, here's 10 seconds to your main championship rival, who happens to be ahead of you. It just smacks a bit of. It'd be far too easy to fall down the conspiracy theory hole of, well, we know what the stewards are trying to manufacture here, sort of thing. It's very easy to fall prey and victim to that sort of thinking. And that's no fun for anyone. It's a problem he doesn't need, because he's already suffers from a lot of confidence issues. We've been quite vocal about that, and mental issues as well, trying to, deal with everything and the pressure and all this sort of thing. And us even having this conversation, we don't want to have it, because we just want it decided by who is the best driver at the end of the day. And rain is a great equalizer. And so that's even more of a reason why we didn't need the stewards to get involved then. Nothing happened, and I'd have been very interested to see if it hadn't been Piastri, if it had been a different driver, what the penalty would have been. Would it have been as harsh? Would it have happened at all of these sorts of things. And it's just annoying that we have to keep doing these what ifs, and it just so happens that a lot of the time Norris is the driver. It's involved in it, and it's not doing him or us any favors with trying to. We try and give him as much as we can, and then something like this happens, and you go, it's not helping.
And it's not even a what if on Norris's part. It's a what if that sort of surrounds his circumstance. And the best part of it is the fact that Max Verstappen even said that he wasn't affected really by the heavy braking of Oscar Piastri. So you're sort of left going, okay, I know that penalties are not supposed to be handed down due to the circumstance or result of the driver's actions. Like it's supposed to be abject. It's based on the driver's immediate behavior, not what happens because of it. But in this instance, nothing happened. It's like people often argue, yeah, but you ruined that guy's race. Surely you should have a stronger penalty. In this case, Oscar's actions led to nothing. So,
Well, yeah, the one time I wouldn't have mind something being looked at after the race.
yeah.
It would have still annoyed me a little bit if he'd finished on the podium. But with all things considered, there was no guarantee of that. He could have still spun off at some other point, the rain being what it was. There was no guarantee that he was going to make it. And then if he gets a 10-second penalty after that, who cares?
Yeah, at that point it doesn't matter. But especially if by that point Lando may well have been in the lead anyway, so it's not sort of inheriting Lando a lead by it. But it's just one of those infuriating things, because there's also no consistency based off of what we'd seen in Canada when George Russell had done something similar. Yes, the braking pressures were different. Yes, the speeds were different. But ultimately, I think there needs to have been at this point taken into some consideration the knock-on effects it had, and the fact the other driver who was visibly involved in it, Max Verstappen, held up his hands and went, "Yeah, no, I just spun coming down the hill there towards the Vejo chicane. That was
I've got
nothing.
bigger issues.
Yeah, I was fighting my own demons at this point. Oscar Piastri sort of trying to heat up his tires off the back of a safety car restart. No problems for me at all. So it's a bizarre one. But yeah, ultimately, I think if we look at the way that both drivers drove, if we look at the team performance, it's a really solid outing for McLaren. Both drivers.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It was on absolutely top game, and the team performed pretty admirably.
Last point I'll make is it just reminds me of Budapest a bit of last year in terms of you've got a 1-2 in really awkward circumstances, but as a team you don't care because you've got a 1-2 and everyone else is going, we understand that, but there is something to talk about here that we really should.
Yeah, if you think about it as just a through and through McLaren fan, you do not care who is behind the wheel. You just love the team that is based in Woking. You're coming off the back of this weekend, high as a kite. You're happy as Larry because your team has secured a 1-2 and executed it perfectly, which I think is sort of a great way of looking at it. But also the fact that both drivers, ignoring that moment from Oscar, they never had offs. They never had any great spins. They never had any great wobbles. They were perfect teammates. They were perfectly competitive. I do take a slight bone of contention with sort of how joyous their podium was when it came to sort of celebrating with Nico Hülkenberg. Like, look back at the shots of, was it
It just
a,
seemed a bit disjointed.
yeah, it seems a bit disjointed, a bit cold. If you look back at when Maldonado won the Spanish Grand Prix a couple of years back. You look at the way the other drivers are holding him aloft and celebrating and cheering, sort of.
It's an iconic photograph from Formula One.
Yeah. And you sort of look at the way that Oscar and
It's
Lando.
why I was so glad that at the British Grand Prix, where Lando's finally won his home race, you can't tell because everyone's just chanting "Nico, Nico, Nico." Okay, that kind of this is why you should have just embraced him on the podium. Sort out your stuff behind closed doors because there's clearly something there. Focus on what everybody loves right now. As Piastri even said in the post-race interview immediately, like there's one good thing to talk about today, at least I'm going to focus on, and that's Nico Hülkenberg getting a podium. You go, that's how you just get around everything for now. Just focus on Nico. He'll happily take all of the attention for today. He won't mind being the scapegoat.
Yeah, you utilize that Nico Hülkenberg excitement to just sort of focus on that, and then sort of sort out your own demons in your sort of engineering debrief after the race. We'll touch on Sauber and obviously Nico's podium a bit more in a minute. But first, we've got to get through Ferrari, and obviously we've mentioned drivers fighting demons across the weekend. Leclerc qualified sixth, very upset with himself, and would have gone to finish 14th, so even worse. And Hamilton would qualify fifth and finish fourth. Now, as tricky as it is, were you backing Lewis to continue his streak for podium finishes at the British Grand Prix, or were you backing?
I was doing option three and willing Norris to bin it somewhere so that I could get both of them up there. And then I could have whoever it was finishing, just then Max would be on the podium. It'd be kind of like a Hülkenberg. Piastri, maybe it gets his win anyway. Then you've got Hülkenberg and Hamilton on the podium, or you've got Hamilton and Verstappen with Hülkenberg on the podium as well. For me, it was a shame to see Hamilton's streak itself an end, but out of everyone to end it, I don't think he'll mind one bit that it's Hülkenberg of all people. Think the car is definitely tricky. We've seen this. And Leclerc, he gambled, he lost. But that could have quite as easily been Lewis. You know, they both started so close together. One of them was going to do it. Lewis, being Lewis, he always comes alive at Silverstone, like we say. And the fact that he got that close, I think it shows his approach to this year, because Leclerc's been embedded in that team for so long, whereas Hamilton, he'd just come in, he's learning, and he understands that Charles probably knows everything, let's face it, should know everything a lot better than he does, but he still wants to find out those answers by himself and go through the motions of it, so that even if Leclerc's gone down a particular avenue and it's not worked, he still wants to go down the avenue to be sure that it doesn't work for him too. And I think that's why we're seeing this improvement from Lewis and why he didn't necessarily gamble, or why, I mean, again, we don't always hear all the team radio, why if he was maybe asked or told to do something, he didn't copy the player. And yeah, it was just, it was a shame that he couldn't get there. And I was looking at the predictions afterwards that we made, and I thought, well, there's going to be someone even happier than me that Lewis didn't get up there. And that's Ellie May, because her prediction of Hamilton getting into a podium position in the last five laps would have absolutely ripped her guts out if that had come true at the expense of Nico Hülkenberg. So, solid improvement still. I think they're getting there. Hamilton's getting there, but just not here.
Yeah, I'd... Ferrari did well with Lewis, especially considering that his GPS locator and a lot of his data was down for half the race as well. So trying to call pit strategies, getting that information on how the car itself is running beyond just how Lewis feels it's running was going to be a struggle. Shame for Leclerc, but like you said, it was a gamble and it was going to befall one of them. The car is still, for want of a better phrase, a piece of shit. And they are lucky that they have Lewis and Charles, who are good enough to drive around it as well. This is something that Red Bull don't have, and I'll mention it when we get to them, but when you've got a bad car and a driver that can drive around it, it very quickly starts to mask a lot of the issues and you start to get those strong results come through. I think Ferrari are sort of in that location at the moment, and they need time, money, support to do the development. And it does make me worried a little bit about their 2026 car if the sort of approach to development and the pathways they often select for development haven't always been quite so fruitful. Look at the ways they've sort of developed cars, F14T, the sort of different approach they took at the start of this latest.
I think the difference is that the driver they have with the team now is a Michael Schumacher, a Niki Lauda kind of driver, where he's not, he wants that championship so badly that if they try going down certain routes and it doesn't work for him, he's going to go, no, just going to stop you right there, guys. Get that back in the box and let's do this properly.
Yeah, let's put that part back away and let's try this again once more, but properly. And it's going to be interesting to see how Lewis does car development at Ferrari. I think that's going to be my sort of, positively thinking, that's my biggest takeaway from how this goes. And if we've seen that this is how well the team are adapting and growing with him at the moment, I think it's positive signs. Meanwhile, over at Mercedes, Russell qualified fourth, finished 10th just, and Antonelli would qualify 10th, actually 7th on the road, and would DNF, unfortunately for him. Yeah, Russell fighting.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I think it's just a very short, brutal way of summing this up. To hammer home kind of how bad a weekend it was for them here, the first time Mercedes had been off the podium at Silverstone since 2012.
Ouch. I mean, was Lewis even at Mercedes in 2012?
No. That would have been Nico and Schumacher.
Yeah, so that's possibly part of the argument for that. But at the same time, you're sort of left thinking, ooh, it's just a bit of another slippery weekend for Mercedes in sort of both senses of the word. Russell fighting demons and Behrmann for that sole point. Well, the Merc could get its tyres switched on and hot enough to work. Certainly the Inters in the wet conditions, as soon as it started to dry, it absolutely blew through its compound. And it's a car that still needs development, with so many of the teams now focusing on 2026. I reckon we could see the order of pace before the summer break stick around for the second half of the season, which is great news if you're Sauber and bad news if you're Mercedes, who are now sort of being rivaled on pace by Haas and Williams from here to the end of the season. If that's the way it's going to go for temperatures and circuits moving forwards, it could be a bit sort of swings around.
Great for us as fans. Terrible for Mercedes.
Yeah, as fans, amazing. Cinema. I'm here for every weekend if it's Ollie Behrmann making George Russell's life living hell on circuit for a single point. Give it to me every weekend till the end of the year. But at the same time, for Mercedes, it's sort of one of those moments where it's a bitter pill to swallow, and you've just got to accept that this style of car was not your greatest period, and hope that you've got, as the reports might suggest, an absolute stonker of an engine to really kickstart the new generation of Formula One. But yeah, I think it's a live, learn and move on weekend for Mercedes. Another team that could do with a bit of learning, Red Bull. Verstappen qualifies on pole, finishes fifth after a sort of Actually, no, I'm not going to say it's a surprisingly scrappy race from him, because we've seen sort of the
Have a
car
comparison.
get away from him a bit more this season. So he would finish fifth. Tsunoda would qualify 11th and finish 15th. Go on with your comparison.
First of all, uncharacteristic error from Verstappen, because usually these conditions, they're perfect for him. We saw and thought, he has played a blinder of a hand here this weekend. He got that pole lock out of nowhere, which was just phenomenal. I've got to agree with Marco, but I don't think it was as good as the one in Japan, but it wasn't far off either. Then he just makes this error, and you go, oh, geez, what happened there? But then Verstappen does what Verstappen does, and it smacked to me of very Russia 2021 in the style of driving from him, and he just somehow arrives at the finish line much higher up than where he was, and he's in P5 in this instance, and he just kind of carves his way through the field. That being said, I reckon he might be off to Mercedes after this, if this is best they can offer. Yeah, I'll hand it over to you for Yuki for a start, because I feel like there's a little conversation here, but I think you've got the better starting point.
Yeah, I'll touch on Max then, because most of what I've written is sort of more down the Yuki line of things, but I think you're right with Max on sort of, it was a messy weekend from sort of bits of it, but occasionally that's when we see some of the absolute best of Max Verstappen. Like you said, we saw a great lap from him in qualifying, not quite Japan spec, but really up there when you sort of, you see a lap and you sit back and go, whoa, that's a driver that is wholly in tune with a car. And
that's sitting up and taking off the sunglasses and going, my days.
Yeah. And again, the way he just sort of came back through the field after that spin was, I don't know entirely how he did it. I assume just through the proxy of being Max Verstappen, because that car is, much like I said for Ferrari, a heap of shit. And if you compare what Dunn did in McLaren in Austria to how Lindblad got on Friday, the difference is stark. One car can be gotten on top of quickly and easily. The other is truculent and recalcitrant. And Lindblad has had a lot of private tests with older chassis, with Red Bull and with RB, Toro Rosso, Minardi, whatever we call them. And he is aware of the controls and what to expect and how the team runs and all of those processes. And he knows what to expect from a Formula One car. He knows how a Formula One car should feel, how it should deploy its power, how it should gain its traction, its downforce. And you put him in the Red Bull and it all falls apart. So to be so far off the pace shows two things. One, how much of a pig that car is, and also just how good Max is at driving around problems. For the past how many seasons has Max been masking these issues, these problems, these hurdles that sort of other drivers before him, way before Perez, have all gone?
I'd argue ever since Daniel Ricciardo, though.
You could, and I think you'd be fair to argue that. Daniel Ricciardo, 8 wins, came close with some championships, was good at driving around and masking the problems of that Red Bull. The problem was trying to find someone else who could do that in the same way that Max Verstappen can, who can drive around. And this isn't me saying the car is built to Max Verstappen. No, the car is actually built very badly. Max Verstappen just knows how to get the most out of it. And this is one of the things that defines a very good driver and a great driver, is the one that can overcome the hurdle of a car. And
are you then saying that Adrian Newey doesn't actually know how to design a car?
He builds a car that's very on edge and takes a lot to control.
That's a very diplomatic answer and a nice way out of that.
If you look at the way that the McLaren is very forgiving, it's very flowing, they've been able to tune the front end very specifically to how Lando Norris would like it, and it's revolutionised his performance. Look at the form he had in Austria, where he had a new series of front end dampers and steering controls that completely changed the way that the car responded to him. Whereas if you look at how the Red Bull responds, aerodynamically, it's a brilliant car, but potentially there are other areas of it that aren't quite as strong as its aerodynamics, i.e. which was Adrian Newey's department. But you look at what makes a good driver and a great driver at the moment, it's those that can drive around issues. We said with Charles and Lewis, they are pretty well versed at the moment at driving around the issues that Ferrari has. Max is phenomenal at driving around issues. Alex and Pierre are now currently both overachieving in some slightly rotten cars. You could argue that that is experience they gained at Red Bull, driving a very unpredictable and very uniquely set up and devised.
Well, it was Albon or Gasly, I think Albon, who said how twitchy it was to drive, and kind of it was like getting in a whole load breed of F1 car from what he was used to down at Toro Rosso.
Yeah, the Toro Rosso is neutral, it's pliant, it responds to your inputs in a time frame that you can manage and control, and as you put in those inputs you get feedback. Whereas the Red Bull, you just don't seem to. We saw that with Limblad, and we see how much even Max has to fight it. And Max's driving style is unlike anyone else's on the grid. And I think, unfortunately, that sort of led to this point where Red Bull haven't bothered to change the car. It's not they've developed it for Max. They just haven't changed it because Max can control it, but no one else can. And if you look at the broad picture, there is something drastically wrong with Red Bull. If you consider their loss of Jonathan Wheatley as well, and look at what he's done with Sauber, a team that since arriving, you've got to consider how vital he's been to that team. And I think Wheatley is a different argument. We were saying this before we started recording. Wheatley is a different concept to Komatsu. Komatsu was part of Haas moving all the way up through the ranks. He understood how it worked. He was there starting to sort of put in changes and encourage these changes that came to fruition as he stepped into team principalship last season. But for Wheatley, he arrived at the start of this season and quite probably sort of noticed a few significant things, not necessarily technical things or development things around the car, but just practices around Sauber.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
That he was the king of at Red Bull, and Red Bull was always the clean operating, achieving the best pit stop times. It's the reason why Red Bull were able to do like pit stops in the dark, pit stops in zero gravity. He's the guy that sort of devised this brilliant structure and brilliant strategy and brilliant sort of compadreship within Red Bull that meant as a team they could be high achieving. And I think he's very quickly instilled that and found that passion within Sauber. But the problem is he's also no longer driving Red Bull to do that. And I think that's possibly one of the reasons we're seeing sort of a bit of a stumble backwards, dare I say. And if you look at also how quickly Red Bull is currently going through a staff turnover, we've often said about the brain drain of people leaving Red Bull. If they knew Wheatley was going, if they knew that Newey was going, you think, okay, well, the guys that are holding this together, that are making this a great place to live, work, have companionship with people that I'm going to spend half of a year working and living alongside, rubbing shoulders with in the factory, on planes, in airports, at track sides, in development sessions. You want to be with a team that you like and work well with. If the guy that is the glue to that has left, you can begin to see why, not just at Red Bull, I'm going to also sort of hint at conversations I've had with people within those factories that this is also now going to start happening at RB as well. And it's going to be a torrid time for whichever drivers are tied to those seats for the coming seasons. So I think you might be correct in suggesting that Max Verstappen might be looking at Mercedes more favourably.
Red Bull, the team Penske of Formula One this season. It's not quite as bad as that yet, but it's not that great either. I get your points that you make about the car, first of all, and I'm going to tackle that. But I think even with the testing that Lindblad's got for now, I think it's still expecting too much from him and feeds into the whole finding next Verstappen narrative a bit. Hulk, by comparison, did the same as Aaron in practice when he switched out for him in FP1 and then FP2, and he then put it onto the podium. So it's a bit more, again, of half a dozen of one and half a dozen of the other, as I was mentioning earlier. At the end of the day, even with the car, and I'm not saying there's no issues with the car, there's clearly a lot of issues with it. It is Yuki's fifth season in F1, and I think finishing another race out of the points, when there was a better chance than usual of getting them, and finishing last, and being the only driver a lap down, says quite a bit. And I think there's a lot of reflection needed in a summer break with regards to what you do with that second seat at Red Bull. Because, as you say, they are tailoring it a little bit more to Max, which is understandable. He's the only one who can ever get anything out of it since Ricciardo left. But that doesn't necessarily then mean that you switch Yuki out. This has become a weird back and forth between us this season of who'd you put in that seat, and I think I don't necessarily care too much now, as long as whoever they put in there they keep for at least a season and they throw everything at them in the same way that Mercedes did with Antonelli. They do the Antonelli approach and they need to decide that pretty soon. They've got two Grand Prix until the summer break. Have the conversations then, decide in the summer break, make a plan, But not just that, but for all the other holes in their boat that you were making reference to there, and poke them, or at least get a plan together to figure out how you're going to do it. Otherwise, Cadillac are going to beat you out of the gates next year, and they're kind of just coming out this incredibly fresh. Yeah, I don't think you can credit Wheatley with everything Sauber's been doing this year, because, like you say, sure, he's contributed to stuff, but it was underway before he got there, some of it as well. And I think I was saying to you before we hit record, no one person or thing is a magic bullet in this sport. If that was the case, it wouldn't matter that the Ferrari or the Red Bull are bad because Verstappen and Hamilton are there. But like you say, in terms of coming in and assessing what's going on, very easy to pinpoint some things and go, well, that's not just something you're doing differently. That is something you're doing wrong that is different. And we can make these easy fixes, and you can see maybe how that changes a team like Sauber pretty quickly. But it's hard to know how much credit to give certain things, because we're on the outside. We don't know all the intricacies of it, but he's definitely helping. And I think his experience at Red Bull is invaluable there. And he already feels very much at home there. And he is in charge of that team in a lot of ways now. And he was never going to really get that at Red Bull on this corner of Marco with there. And Red Bull, they need to, it's just yet another thing they got to figure out. And you're saying about what would they have done if they had a bit more of a heads up that knew your Wheatley was leaving. I would kind of just assume now that Verstappen's leaving. Plan for the worst case scenario, because that's going to serve you a lot better in the long run. And if he stays, brilliant, you're sorted. But if he doesn't and you don't have a plan for that, you're pretty screwed.
Yeah, it... I think this is one of the weird points where sort of we have our own sort of specificities or sort of little sort
we're
of
coming at the same problem from different angles, but yeah, we're not the same outcome.
Yeah, we have small bits that we sort of disagree on or view very differently, but I think overall we both understand that yes, Wheatley will have sort of had a unique impact when he arrived at Sauber, and also will have been sort of a key impact to the sort of the degradation of Red Bull and the way that the cars are and all sorts. So it's just one of those things that sort of week by week, whether they want us to or not, if you're clever about it, you can learn an incredible amount about Red Bull, how they run as a team, and sort of what they do, how they do, and where it when it
why
starts.
Why is Keanu Reeves not doing a documentary series on what on Red Bull? We'd love to get the inside track there.
I think we've talked about Red Bull more than enough, as we often end up doing, and I'm going to sum them up with one final sentence, which is you learn more from your failures than you do from your successes. And at the moment, we are all learning a lot from Red Bull's failures.
You do that.
Yeah. Moving on then to Williams, who have had a lot of failures previously and have learned a fair amount from them, it seems. Alex Albon qualified 13th, Sainz qualified 9th, Albon finished 8th, and Sainz finished 12th.
Not much to say for them. Just glad they had a relatively clean weekend. Claire Williams was back at Silverstone with Channel 4. And as we'll get to later, I have Sainz to thank my Fantasy F1 team this week. So thank you, Carlos.
Very nice indeed. Yeah, both cars finished. I think this was just sort of a huge hurdle they'd sort of laid out for themselves over the previous weekends. A good result for Alex too. It's mad to think that while Williams' closest rival this season is now Sauber, it's not a race for ninth place for these two teams. While we're worried about Williams being their first to turn off their development pathways this season, if they've refound their form and reliability, they might be okay for a little while longer. So the hunt for them for fifth place goes on. And I don't know, I'm kind of excited for the Williams-Sauber battle for fifth. It's sort of like being back into like the early 2010s, I want to say, sort of almost around that time. I'm trying to think of the right era.
That means we can get a Williams win in the not too distant, then bring it, bring it. I mean, nothing against Mr. Hülkenberg, but if he can get a podium at the British Grand Prix halfway through a season, there's no reason we can't get a Williams win.
Alex Albon maiden win is gonna go big, I think. And I
Singapore would be nice.
Yeah, very close to a home race for him, geographically speaking, at least. So that would be an interesting one. It feels like it could be a weekend that they do that as well. We've already given a mention to them. Sauber, Hülkenberg qualified 19th, finished. Third, Bortoleto qualified 16th. Unfortunate DNF for him, but 19th to third, 19th to the podium in a Sauber. If I told you someone had done that last year, or pretty much any year since maybe Charles Leclerc left, you would have thought that I was crazy.
Prior to this weekend, Nico Hülkenberg had spent 177 laps in a podium position across his career, without then converting it to an actual podium. He is the 218th driver to finish on the podium in an F1 championship history. Sauber's first podium in F1 since Kobayashi back in Japan in 2012. As we said earlier, 238 Grand Prix leading up to this over 15 years. He technically retired at least once, was a reserve and test driver for a couple of years at the very least for Aston Martin, and looked like he was done. He's the first German on the podium since Vettel back in Baku in 2021, and is the oldest first-time podium finisher at 37 years old since George Vollmer, who was 39 at the 1973 Spanish Grand Prix. If there was ever a time for us to wonder what Hülkenberg could have done in a top car with a top team, then this is it. You know, I mean, everybody loved it. Albon and Gasly on the team, Radio going ham for him, Verstappen fist-bumping Vieira as he drove past, Hamilton shared it on his story, Piastri nicely deflecting, as we mentioned, from his situation, by saying it was the highlight of the day. And then Aston Martin and Mercedes gifting champagne to them because they obviously didn't have any, because why on earth would they? And then, to top it all off, you've got Magnussen in the garage too, to which the best meme I saw there was, maybe you'll suck your balls tonight. So, please do something special next year, Audi. Please let this be the start of something.
Yeah, it was... we've already mentioned Jonathan Wheatley, so I can sort of almost skip over a few of my notes for this one, because the legend you are, what on earth have you done to this team? And if he continues this form, if he is able to really help keep this team motivated, this group of people that we saw celebrating so wildly for their driver, motivated and cohesive, as Audi arrives, if they arrive in a competitive form, this is going to be impressive, and he could well be heralded as one of the great team sort of bosses if he's able to have this turnaround under his watch. Furthermore, Nico Hülkenberg, I wish to kiss the ground you walk upon. A phenomenal drive, and over the last four Grand Prix has outscored Red Bull. Nico Hülkenberg in a Sauber has outscored Red Bull 31 points to 29.
Which on itself isn't that impressive, but outscoring Max Verstappen, that is impressive, and he's done that.
Yeah, it's lovely. And equally, Gabby's passion and tie with the team is great to see. He might have DNF'd early on, but it was reassuring to know that while it's taken him a while to get to point scoring form in Formula One, the team is wholly behind him and he's being supported by Nico too. And you're given this sort of beautiful picture of a team that's working perfectly together in unison and is supporting one another as they are rebuilding and growing their way through the grid. We've seen this with Williams and the way that Alex Albon and James Vowles have been able to sort of re-incentivize and re-motivate this team, and seeing it again with Sauber, who have gone through the same period of sort of dire time in the doldrums with dodgy sponsors, and we still call them Sauber because neither of us can really bring ourselves to call them Kickstake, whatever the fuck. So to us, it is at the end, almost certainly knowing the way that
great team name though, yeah, Kickstake, whatever the fuck.
But knowing the way
get that of the merchandise.
Maybe. Knowing the way that F1 mechanics refer to their teams, the fact that the guys at RB still call themselves Toro Rosso and some of the older guys still call themselves Minardi, I know deep down that all the guys who work for that team still call themselves Sauber. And you know that the tight-knit closeness of the family, they're still one of the smallest teams on the grid. I think they're not hugely bigger than Haas, are having this sort of phenomenal resurgence through the grid. It is one of those things that makes you love the sport. And it's not just that the guy finally gets his podium, congratulations. It's the way the team comes together. And the way you see the rest of the teams, like you said, you see Mercedes and Aston Martin bringing champagne down to them, because it just wasn't something that Wheatley had ever thought to put on the inventory for this weekend. And I'd say sort of partly rightly so. You've sort of been over the moon, the fact that you've been able to sort of scrape a couple of fifths so far this season. So yeah, champagne wouldn't have been something that he would have perhaps factored into his budgets when he set out for this year, but we'll see.
And you know what?
What?
Still really like their livery.
It's a bright and fun livery, and it improves your
day. I never shied away from it. I embraced it, and it's paid me back in dividends.
It has paid you dividends. So yeah, Sauber, thank you. RB, meanwhile, Lawson qualified 15th, Hadjar qualified 12th, both with DNF.
This, just for me, there's not much to say here, really, is it? But it just reinforces the argument for letting these junior drivers, when they're coming up through the ranks in the feeder series, race in mixed conditions. Ollie Bearman was the only driver who survived all of this. Much like in Australia, all the rookies buggered there. Bearman started at the back, got through it all, survived, did the same here, and partly due to the fact that he grew up in Britain, but at the same time, what's the excuse for everyone else? You can kind of, once you get to Formula 3 and Formula 2, you're going to places where rain does become a factor, such as Silverstone. And we had an incident in the feature race in Formula 2 towards the end. Joshua Dirksen, or Joshua is at the moment. I noticed earlier that Joshua Pearson and Josh Pierce, two different people, because one of them is the fictional character from the F1 movie, and the other one's an Indy NXT driver who has a sufficiently similar name and threw me through a loop. But Joshua Dirksen, he spun off down the Hamilton Straight, I think, and just sort of thought, yeah, if you let these drivers race in these conditions a bit more often, or at least get them driving behind the safety car at a decent speed so they can get a bit more of a feel for it, then by the time they do get to F1, they won't be perfect, but they'll be a damn sight more used to it than they appear to be at the moment, because no one else DNF'd here this weekend. It was just the rookies again, and it's an unfortunate way for that to go about. And Lawson, yeah, just blamed Ocon because you couldn't see that Tsunoda was ramming up the inside of Ocon, and you go, yeah, it's, when you watch that back, you'll maybe apologise to Ocon, but again, it's just one of those unfortunate things that Ocon was in kind of no man's land there. He's kind of like, I'm screwed whichever way I go here, and there's not enough time to decide which driver you maybe like more, and I'll drive into this one instead, sort of thing. Unfortunate for him, but we know they're both capable of a lot more.
Yeah, both suffered unfortunate and no fault shunts. Hadjar, like you said, just couldn't see anything at all in the spray, and Lawson caught in the top deck of an Ocon sandwich as Tsunoda nosed up the inside. Ocon goes left, he's done for closing the door on Tsunoda. He goes right, he's done for purposely causing a collision with Lawson. So he just sort of tries to hold his line as best as possible, and then Tsunoda just sort of punts him a little bit. He gets on a bit of a wet patch, and unfortunately, it's Lawson. It was a pure racing incident in that case. But when you consider how Lawson and Tsunoda did in the Red Bull in comparison to the V car, again, my argument goes back to how neutral and pliant that junior car is. And we mentioned about sort of drivers in the feeder series and Ollie Bearman having the best crack at things. If we look back at his junior racing career, 2013 through 2020, he was Trent Valley Karting Club when he started, which is up in Lincolnshire, phenomenally wet when it rains. And then he goes to Formula 4, his first single-seater Formula 4 debut was an autumn series in Germany, which is going to be very wet indeed. And then you just follow it from there. You sort of go, okay, so he did loads of that and then did like a couple of winter series. And then he joins German and Italian F4. So they can be a bit mixed anyway. And we're going to European circuits where you do get a fair bit of rain. And then we get to Formula 3 and Formula 2, and after that. He did a bit of GB3 as well, which is, again, a hugely British circuit-based series. I think his only sort of real chance of having, like, a completely dry series would have been when he was with, like, Mumbai Falcons for Formula Regional Asian Series. But he didn't do too well there, probably because it was too dry for him. I think he placed 15th overall in that.
Yeah, it's let them race in the rain.
Yeah.
They need it.
Let them get soggy. Let them learn. They won't do it any other way. Next up on the list, though, Aston Martin. Alonso qualified 7th, would finish 9th, and Stroll would qualify 17th and finish 7th.
Yeah. Double points, and Stroll kind of filling his quota of sometimes remembering he can actually do this. Very bizarre to see him in P3 for way longer than anyone expected to see him up there in the first place. But he... credit where it's due, he does perform well in mixed conditions somehow. He doesn't always manage to kind of convert it, but the fact that he was even there in the first place just shows that there is a racing driver in there. It's just buried real deep down in there. And then Alonso, some brilliant team radio again. I don't know how much of it you would have gotten at points, but how come you managed to make a brilliant strategy all the time except for me? Was another absolute classic, and some of the shots when you're seeing some of the battles further ahead of him on the grid, you just see this Aston Martin in the background. He's just again very much like Jaws towards the end of the Grand Prix, and you're just going, if one of you does mess up, we know who's going to be in the perfect position to capitalize this, and who knows, could even have gotten a podium out of it, which would not have surprised me either. But yeah, overall, pretty decent weekend for them on the outside of it once you get to the end of Sunday. Because I think that's the thing, we always make such a deal out of the weekend as a whole, but ultimately I don't, as a fan, I don't really care how badly you do on Friday and Saturday if you then absolutely nail it on Sunday. And Aston Martin standards this year, they nailed it on Sunday.
They nailed it on Sunday with one driver. I think they could have done better with Alonso, but yeah, both drivers in the points. It's a points haul. I think at the end of the day, you can call it what it is. It's a points haul for the team. For me, I'm always perplexed by Lance Stroll. As soon as it's like damp and greasy, he just becomes prime center.
You could have just left it there. You could have just been perplexed by Lance Stroll, just full stop. Left it there.
Sentence works at that point. But yeah, like one of my favorite internet gags is racetrack is slightly damp, and then it's like a sort of compressed gif of like Ayrton Senna's best overtakes, and it's like Lance Stroll becomes a gif, and you're like, I don't know why or how he does it, but he just does, and it's like this,
he's stuck in the start of a superhero film where he's just discovering his powers, but he never actually learns how to use them.
No. It's the growing up in a wet country thing. He's Canadian, and he spent most of his time karting and doing his junior series in the north of England. All he's known is be damp and grumpy. And the net result is, when the weather is terrible, Lance Stroll is good.
I was born in the wet, molded by it.
Yeah. You were merely adopted by the wet. I was born in it. We've spoken about Ollie Bearman already. We'll get to Haas. And Ocon qualified 14th, finished 13th. Ollie Bearman qualified 8th, started on the grid 18th because of an unfortunate / silly penalty for speeding under red flags, and he also crashed.
Well, mainly crashing in the entrance to the pit lane in spectacular fashion, and Max Verstappen going, what on earth was that? Yeah. Not much to say here. There's just a shame they couldn't get points. This kind of reeked of Ocon somehow sneaking into the top 10 again, but nice pirouettes. The pair of them. Very Abu Dhabi 22, I want to say, or 21 with Latifi and Schumacher.
22, I think it was, with Latifi and Schumacher, because everyone sort of panicked that it was going to happen again. Not that.
Yes.
But yes, yeah. It was a lovely synchronized pirouette. But yeah, again, just sort of a weekend of what could have been. Shame about the collisions, but I think Haas can sort of grown up enough through this season. They can pick themselves up and move on. I am still in.
Less worried about them than normal.
Yes. I'm no longer too overly concerned. And I'm looking forward to, where did I put the box? Looking forward to meeting them at Festival of Speed and getting my new hats signed. We'll move on from Haas. I think it's easy enough to do. To Alpine. Gasly qualifies 8th, finishes 6th. Qualapinto qualifies at the back of the grid and then doesn't even start. Not actually sure where Franco went.
The best bit of you missing qualifying, I think, to tell you the story. So Qualapinto binned it in qualifying.
Right.
And the cameraman, the race director, all perfectly in line with one another with what the thinking here was, because as soon as he launched into the wall, the cameraman went straight to Briatore, who was sitting on the pit wall with his head in his hands, and everyone around the world's going, how's this working out for you, buddy? Is it going all right? Going well? Yeah. Good job. Pierre Gasly. Yeah, just kind of doing the Stewie Griffin.
Yeah,
head, keeps turning around. As much as Pierre Gasly getting P6 out of absolutely bloody nowhere is absolutely great for him, for the team, for morale, you have to feel sorry for him, and I hope he's talking to Cadillac for his sake, because I don't honestly know what Alpine are going to be capable of anytime soon. I know we've said this about Stake and about Williams at points, but I think with them, there was always something. I think Williams, it was just an inherent belief that they can, because it's Williams, they've got to be able to at some point. And with Sauber, they always had, with Bottas, you think if anyone could maybe grab something positive, it'd be him, and then you put Hulkenberg and go, well, we know what the driver he is. If they can cobble together something, if he can't do it, then no one can. But as he's there, that's their best bet, and that's kind of worked out. Whilst we didn't let ourselves run away with that belief too much, we have now been kind of rewarded with that kind of blind faith in them. Alpine. I'm waving my hands around a lot like an Italian here, and I don't have any full words, and I think it probably says enough. And it just, again, I'm going to have this as the plea of Just give the team to Peugeot and Citroën and let them deal with it.
The Stellantis Formula One team, just do it. Let them hold money and let them make something of it. I'm
the Inspector Clouseau Formula One team. Pink Panther livery.
Formula One team. Steve Nielsen is set to join them as managing director, and then eventually he will be assumed into the role of team principal, which maybe this will be their best crack at a 100-race plan. Who knows? Does Franco not starting technically deduct one from that 100-race plan? Has he got an extra go in his 100 races?
That indicates that he has a separate 100-race plan than Gasly and the team as a whole.
I don't even think that Colapinto's got quite 100 races. There is already rumours that potentially Doohan is back in the car from Spa, which will be interesting, and I look forward to that because I want a rebuilt Doohan to actually have a chance and do something. If he scores 1 point in that LP,
imagine that. We just need a Grosjean 2012 situation and get that boy on the podium and go.
We will hear the capitulative yells from Mick Doohan all the way from his apartment in Monaco, and it will be glorious.
If ever there was a time for a worthy sequel to Not Bad for a Number Two Driver, that would be it.
I cannot wait for it. And Jack would do that as well. But yeah, it's Alpine. Yeah, I think you're right with sort of like with Williams and Sauber. We sort of have this knowledge, this faith, this belief that they can build up to it. And they've got the right people there and they've got the internal motivation to do it. With Alpine as it stands, I just can't see them doing it. I don't feel like they're in it anymore. They've disconnected from it for me. And I do want Pierre Gasly to get a chance because the driving we've seen from him for the past few seasons, when the car is there, if he's not fighting the car, if he's not fighting the team for strategy, he has proven that he is not necessarily one of the all-time great drivers, but he is a very good...
He could win more races.
He could win more races. He could be a multiple race winner. He could be a multiple podium sitter as opposed to, what, like three, four podiums that he's achieved so far. There is more to...
There is multiple.
Yeah, he's obviously Brazil. Obviously, he's won
Monaco.
Monaco, he's finished on the. No, Gasly doesn't.
Zandvoort.
Gasly podiumed. It was Ocon that podiumed at Monaco.
They're both French.
My views on the French are currently sort of wavering around sort of the bottom end of the scale after a terrible weekend trying to get to France. But anyway.
The last thing I'll say before we move on is that if Doohan does come back, I very much hope that he appears at the track a la Sonny Hayes at Silverstone or Abu Dhabi. That would be the best way to do that. Just appears at the end of the pit lane, whereas they let me in the back way.
And walks the wrong way up it or something, and you're sort of, he's back, and probably would also...
Gun music blaring in the background to be his entrance music.
And he would immediately be handed several penalty points on his license for doing that, but...
Worth it.
Worth it for the optics alone. Anyway, we've been recording for quite some time. We might as well jump into our winners and spinners. And we'll start with our winners. I think we can say it on the count of three. One, two, three. Nico Hülkenberg. I'll get that synced up in the edit. What more is there to say? Phenomenal.
Yeah, no, just absolute perfection to the quote Michael Fassbender.
Spinners, you've got a different one to me.
Yeah, because... It just has to be Yuki Tsunoda for me because, I mean, I think it's a race where we're not expecting you to get on the podium, but a P10 or a P9, it shouldn't be out of the question. You lost 2 weeks in a row. You got lapped twice last week. You got the only driver to get lapped this week. And, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, do better.
Yeah. It's... I agree with you. I think there's certain external concerns.
It just hurts you more than it hurts me. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want him to do better, but I won't be quite so critical in my opinion of it. My spinner though, Franco Colapinto, for a DNS and reportedly now being swapped back for Doohan, you're over half a second off the pace of Nico, failed to make the race start.
In P19, bear in mind. It's not even like he qualified in 10th or anything.
Yeah. In his entire span there, he's achieved 2/13, 2/15, and a 16th. While Gasly has been in the points twice in that time and made it into Q3. It's like, with that machinery, you can get it into the top 10. You can do it, but apparently you can't. So there we go.
Then we get to our predictions review. No one got points for pole position. No one predicted Max Verstappen was going to do it. 1 point to Ellie May for a Norris win. 1 point to you, Timo, for a Piastri P2 and a further one for a Piastri fastest lap. And 0 points for wild prediction.
I'm happy with my 2 points. It's two more than I thought I was going to get it. A lot of points over the course of the Grand Prix. So I'll take it.
I think on reflection, my Hamilton, Verstappen, Russell prediction...
after Friday it looked all right.
Yeah,
it's just then Saturday and Sunday happened.
Yeah, certainly Sunday happened. That was a big hurdle to overcome. Meanwhile, in the world of fantasy Formula One, oh, you've got a point. Hang on.
Yeah, just before you get into the results for Silverstone and overall for the fantasy F1. So after FP3, I suddenly remembered I had Carlos Sainz in my fantasy F1 team, and I'd seen how badly they were doing, and I thought, I've got an hour. I can still change my team. I'm going to go and do this. So I quickly swapped him out and then swapped a bunch of drivers out. So I then put in Lawson for Hadjar. Admittedly, that didn't work. I put in Gasly, put in Ocon, mixed results. But then I swapped Bortoleto for Nico Hülkenberg and put him on double points for Silverstone weekend. And I didn't think it was going to work as brilliantly as it did. But oh my days, you combine that with having Ferrari and McLaren as my constructors. I was treated very, very nicely for that decision. Plus, having Alonso there as the natural rookie to be part of the team, that just, I was very chuffed myself when I opened up the app and realised, oh, I did a good thing. I was worried about this.
He has enjoyed success. I'd done the same thing sort of a little way in advance. I'd sort of been like, I wonder which way I should play this. I haven't really sort of used any of the little magic token things. So I sort of figured with a couple of them, I'll use Limitless. This was before I'd even checked the weather forecast for Silverstone. So I thought, screw it. I reckon we're going to have like the Ferraris up there, Verstappen up there, the two McLarens up there. So for one of my teams, I went Limitless and just shoved them all into it. Plus Red Bull and McLaren as the constructors are like, we'll see what we get. We'll hope for the best.
Usually that should work anywhere. It's something pretty calamitous to happen for that not to work.
Any other weekend, that would have been fine. But even then...
I mean, you didn't do badly.
I didn't do badly. I won this week's race. 200.
Which, when we see where that team is overall, we can see how much of an achievement that is.
Yeah. But if I do it for the other ones, we might get somewhere. Hopeful Heroes. 90 points, which is mine. Undercut Podcast, which is someone else's that's conveniently named this, 229 points. And On the Curbs, 226 points. Congratulations to you.
96 points for Hülkenberg alone. Brilliant.
Big Reach, P4. Catherine's Curse, P5. The Mixing Pot, P7. Can't Grow Moustache, P13. Red Bull Rejects, P61. And Kiwi Burners, P63. Still with all the wrong people in it. Robert Percy, change your goddamn team. Overall...
New person in charge. Deticulus is now in P1. It's been Lando for a while.
Yeah, has so been
a new person taken over.
Either. Deticulus, 2,253 points. Lando, 2,190 points. And Le Victory, 2,160 points at the top of the standings overall. Big Reach, P4. Catherine's Curse, P5. Can't Grow Moustache, P9. On the Curse, P11. The Mixing Pot, P14. Hopeful Heroes, P49. And Kiwi Burner still, P63. Robert Percy, if you're listening, change the goddamn team. It's beyond a joke at this point. That's all for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We will be back soon for a preview of the Belgian Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, we will have a review of the Formula One movie, which we've recorded. I've got the graphics for it, and I was halfway through editing it before I had to get off the train at Le Mans. We will probably also find some time at some point, probably closer to the end of Spa, possibly even after Spa or Hungary, to do some Formula 2 talk, which we haven't done yet this season, and it's proving to be a very interesting season, especially as Richard Vachon might finally do it, but now I've said that, I've screwed him up for at least the next three races. Timo, in the meantime, any more from you?
This week, I've got an interview out over on Instagram with Finnish rally car driver Riikka Hakkinen. So go and check that out. And everything else is, you can pretty much find it there through my Instagram page, t.elvis.data on the curbs.
Very nice. And if you'd like more from me, pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly. It's a bumper issue, so we've got 6 pages of live coverage from the Le Mans Classic. We get behind the wheel of a Jaguar XJR9, I think it is. There is also the story of the two Jowets that are racing or raced across the weekend, bringing an homage to the historic entry they had at Le Mans back in 1953, 1955, I think it was. We've got a hell of a lot of stuff in this. It's an absolutely packed issue. Obviously, there'll be
digital content out as well. Hopefully there'll be a video out soon and the Classic Car Weekly podcast as well. Plus all my pictures on my social media at Jesse on Cars. Otherwise, Timo, I'll speak to you again when it comes to previewing the Belgian Grand Prix.